Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. My name is Matt Weston, and tonight I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, strongest swimming ball, BFD. Hey, how's it going?
Woo! I'm still getting plugged in, but I'm almost ready. So go, keep going. Right. Keep talking. Right. Keep the flow going.
Well, BFD, did you know that the 2015 NFL season is over?
Yeah, I'm sad.
Yeah, I was sad until I realized that Yu Darvish is going to be pitching in May, and we have some more Texas Rangers baseball coming up here pretty soon, so I'm not sad at all anymore.
I got nothing.
But, yeah, well, there's no better way to celebrate the end of the 2015 season than with even more awards. I wrote a post last week. I did a poll for the Reader's Choice Awards that people were too lazy to vote on the second poll, and they just voted the first one. And they complained after the results are in about how, certain nominees weren't there that they wanted to be there, whatever. Without leaving a comment, but it doesn't matter. We're going to do more awards because it's the best way to celebrate the end of something. So the way the show's going to go is that BFT and I both have created four awards each. I think he's made four. I made four at least. And we don't know. Okay. Well, I don't know what his awards are. He doesn't know what mine are. And we're going to go through those. And then after that, we're going to go through some basic ones. And then if we have any viewers awards as well, look at those. And then we'll end it with just kind of some big questions about the 2015 season and kind of what happened this year for the Houston Texans. So without further ado, I'll have my first award here. And also, this show will probably have more cursing than usual. So I put a tag on the podcast as well for this episode. So if you're anybody who has virgin ears or if you have a bunch of children in the car, now might not be the best time to play this one. You can listen to this one later. But anyways, my first award is kind of based off the fact that I was listening to NoFX the other day, and they have this song called There's Something Wrong with the Kids in My Neighborhood. And I think that's what the song's called. But anyway, the song's about Fat Mike living, in a cul-de-sac, and all the kids there, doing their chores and going to school on time and listening to their parents. And one of the lyrics is something like, they're just so goddamn disobedient. They always listen to their mom. They don't drink or fuck or fight and things like that. And the Houston Texans are pretty much that sort of team where they don't get in trouble at all. They don't get any fights. There's no drunk pictures of them stumbling out of the club. None of them have really any personalities that they show outside of, what you see on Sunday aside from, Arian Foster. And in addition, they also have the lamest, franchise in sports as far as the name goes. I thought it was cool when I was 12 years old, but I've slowly started to learn that the Texans is a terrible name. But this kind of got me thinking, and it kind of leads to what this award is. And the other weird thing about the Texans, too, is that they always bring in the worst halftime performers, and they always bring in, the worst, celebrity guests as well, too. So my first award here is the Vanilla Ice Worst Guest of the Year / Worst Halftime Performance. And my selection for this award is Mario Lopez. Now, if you don't remember, in week 3, Mario Lopez was the home field advantage captain of the game. Now, not only is Mario Lopez just a sterile, impotent, hairless, six-pack cyborg, who has a career because he was on a 90s show, and then he also learned how to say yes, sir, and no, sir, and kiss every ass in Hollywood. But there's also he has no personality. There's nothing, enjoyable at all about him. And only that, the Texans brought him in week 3 to be a, celebrity home field advantage captain, which is by far the lamest title you could ever have. I mean, I don't know what the fuck that even means at all. And, he was there for that Texans-Bucks game for just a stupid thing. So, fuck Mario Lopez and fuck how lame this franchise can be. So Mario Lopez is my Vanilla Ice Guest of the Year.
that's great, because you have to name it after Vanilla Ice, because he's the one who started the 2013 shit show. Instead of getting, you know, Chameleon Air or Bun B or any awesome local rap artist to go out and get Vanilla fucking Ice from Richardson, Texas, a Dallas Cowboy fan growing up.
You know, Bumby was there earlier this year, and I guess, you know, Bumby's fine, but I still can't believe they have Mario Lopez of all people. What a just fucking hack, and he's just so, just, he's just a piece of white paper. He's a pair of khaki pants. He's terrible. I can't believe that, you know, they actually did it. So, I guess you're...
I mean, we could have gone with Screech and maybe had a little, you know, hardcore porn during halftime, or... Tiffany Amber Thiessen, you know, those would have been good choices.
Instead, right. Mario Lopez, the worst of the bunch. Or even the principal would have been cooler than Mario Lopez.
Well, mine are more like for ones for you to more answer rather than. So I guess I did it a little differently.
Well,
so.
Well, you have to give your Vanilla Ice worst guess of the year before you give yours.
Oh, I do. Okay. Yeah. Well, geez, I honestly don't pay enough attention. I mean, Vanilla Ice I paid attention to because it just pissed me off so much. But I don't really care. So, I don't know. Can I say any country music singer that was a special guest?
that works. If there was one, you know, let's just assume that Toby Keith was there earlier in the year.
Yeah, I think that's a safe assumption, don't you?
Yeah, let's go with that. So mine was Mario Lopez, and yours was Toby Keith, for those keeping score at home. But the way it works is that after you give your award, you give your answer first, and it gives me some time to think, and then I'll give mine.
Okay, got it. Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. My first one is, who is your jumping out of the birthday cake nude award for the biggest surprise for the Houston Texans this year? I thought about this one long and hard, and I really couldn't find one that wasn't rookie Kevin Johnson. You know, I like what Clowney did this year. He really bounced back. But Kevin Johnson, I was expecting for him to need a little bit more development time, but he came out of the gates firing. And, you know, we didn't really have any veteran guys really step up. I mean, guys like Crick, Cushing, they didn't play great ball. J.J. Watt was himself. The offensive line struggled at times this year. So Kevin Johnson is my jumping out of the birthday cake nude biggest surprise.
I really like that one. I'll write that one down, use it for the awards next year as far as I can write about, because that's a classic. Mine will be Andre Howell. And, you know, in 2014, he was a fine slot corner. You know, he had problems against bigger receivers. You know, they would jump over him. He had problems looking for the ball, but he still displayed, you know, some ability to play man coverage. He couldn't press too well, but he could also break on the ball really well. And then in training camp, they used him as safety, and he had problems tackling, so they really didn't use him all that much. And then whenever they benched Raheem Moore, he came in, took over the free safety job, and he was a revelation back there. And I think they kind of figured out a good way to use him, where they put a lot of cover one robber, where he just kind of sit in the middle of the field and break on the football. And he really turned this defense around, because with him back there, Romeo Crennel kind of realized that they could actually play press coverage again. Now, if their cornerbacks get beat, Howell's back there, and he can actually make a play on the ball, unlike Raheem Moore. He would just stand there, you know, scratching his dick and not be able to, you know, even sniff the football, and then he got thrown deep. And so that kind of led to, I guess, pretty much a domino effect. And so just his presence back there and his ability to even, you know, get close to the football allowed Houston to play more press coverage. And additionally, just his ability to break on the football, you know, really kind of changed things around as far as interceptions go. They couldn't create any turnovers at all, and they put Howell there at safety, and he was breaking on the football and making plays, and it kind of led to the change in turnovers we saw as the year progressed. So if somebody was jumping out of birthday cake, you know, naked for me, it would be Andre Howell.
That's sexy.
Yeah. Oh, this is a lot of fun. All right. My next award is the phrase of the year. And I don't have anybody really sponsor it. But mine is that I probably said this. I know I wrote it at least 15 times. I probably said it 40 times throughout the year. But my season preview, I was going to write one of those kind of BFD self-masturbatory articles where I was just going to take my season preview, put in quotes, and kind of break down what I wrote. And I tried to do it. I just couldn't do it at all. It wasn't very much fun. I didn't really know how to. But I've reread it, and I wrote this sentence down. You can win with Brian Hoyer, but not because of him. And then I went ahead and wrote that sentence at least 15 more times this year, said it on the show about 20 times, and it pretty much rang true with every one of these quarterbacks except, you know, Ryan Mallett. And so, and it wasn't really a case of being lazy. It was just so the most truest words I've ever wrote. And it was kind of the main principle that kind of guided this offense the entire season. So my phrase of the year is the phrase, you can win with quarterback X, but you can't win because of him.
What would my phrase of the year be? I mean, picking on Brian Hoyer is just like shooting dead fish in a barrel. But I think my phrase of the year is that I never felt like the front office had took the quarterback position seriously. I don't feel like they've done it. And I said that a lot of times. That was one of the things I said often, is they weren't treating it like the most important position on the field. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, what were you supposed to do? Well, you draft somebody. You at least pretend to care about the position, and you don't go, you know, get Ryan Fitzpatrick and Brian Hoyer to be your starting quarterback. So that's what you do. You at least feign interest in it. And I don't think the Texans really did. So it was that settling for mediocrity. So that's what phrase I'm going to go with for mine, is treating the quarterback position as the most important one on the field.
Okay. And I remember you saying that in our season preview whenever, you know, before the Chiefs game, when we did our first show of the year. And that was a kind of show we did that short preview at the end and talked about the off season and this team. And that was, I think your biggest fears were the safety play and their inability to treat the quarterback position at all. I have some thoughts on this too, if we want to save some more, you know, deeper analysis for after the awards are over. Are you cool with that?
Sure. Yeah.
All right, so what's your award that you have here, your second one?
My second one is the door hits you on the ass on the way out player you most want cut and released from the team.
Oh, I like this one, too.
I think for me, this one is pretty easy, and this might be a unanimous selection, but Raheem Moore, it was just freaking terrible all year. He was terrible in preseason. Clearly the Broncos didn't like what he was displaying last year. They didn't pursue him at all. You know what? When your incumbent team shows absolutely no interest in re-signing you, and salary cap really isn't that big of an issue, and it was not for the Broncos this past year, that tells me quite a bit. And it didn't take long for you to see, especially in preseason, that he did not know what he was doing out there. He was playing on skates, couldn't follow the ball, couldn't tackle. So I we'll celebrate the day that Raheem Moore is cut. Matt?
Mine, I guess, is another disappointment on the defense. I think the difference is that I really didn't have any expectations for Raheem Moore. I thought, well, maybe he's a passable safety. And, I remember when Captain Ron, he went to training camp, and I don't want me to pick on you at all, Ron, if you're listening. But he went to training camp, and one of the things he said was he was very impressed by Raheem Moore's play, his ability in practice, and all the interceptions and great things he did. Now, I think it's kind of one of the situations where it's really hard to put a lot of stock into, you know, preseason and practice things unless you're there every day and you're seeing all these reps over and over and over again. But, you know, I think a lot of people had some, you know, expectations for him. But mine's Vince Wilfork. And the reason why is because he was supposed to really change the interior, you know, part of this defense and nose tackle. He was paid a lot of money to do so. And it was the first time the Texans really had a, you know, nose tackle that they actually went out and got like this. And he was remarkably bad. I think part of it, he got better as the year progressed. I think one of his problems was he didn't practice at all. We saw it on Hard Knocks. He didn't practice once. He just stood there with his shoulder pads on and just stood there all fat and made jokes. But he got moved back consistently on double teams, couldn't set the point of attack, which led to harder run tackles for Brian Cushing and McKinney. And they were able to get better at playing in traffic and dodging tackles, but they had to work really hard this year, much harder than they were expected to with Wilfork. He also couldn't do anything against one versus one blocks. I mean, it was just stalemates. There was no interior penetration. And then even if he did something like swim and get into the backfield, he was too fat and slow to make a play on the ball carrier. So no matter what he did, he was completely worthless. He was paid I think his cap hit this year is $7 million. I think next year it's going to be about $8 million. He's 33 years old. And like I said, he's completely and 100% worthless. And so I can't wait. And they probably won't even cut him. But I hope he gets cut, and I can't wait until he does. And I hope they take some nose tackle in the second round or call Ryan Pickett's fat ass up because he's even better than Vince Wilfork is probably right now.
Yeah, I mean, when we're reminiscing about Ryan Pickett, wow. That's,
he's pretty good, though.
Poor personnel. He is.
Yeah, he was good. He wanted to play in Houston another year too. And they didn't re-sign him, but he was good. He was better than Wilfork was this year.
Yeah. Low ceiling there.
Yeah. Well, in my preview I wrote that I felt like Benardrick McKinney would have a bigger impact in the run game than Vince Wilfork because I didn't see a huge gap between Wilfork and Pickett, but I saw a much bigger gap between McKinney and Mike Muhammad or Max Bulliff, or one of those other crappy, terrible inside linebackers that the Texans have employed.
Right.
So, but yeah, that's mine. A lot of these also like off-season ones. We're going to do an off-season show next week, and we'll get more in depth into things like this then, as far as cuts and the salary cap goes. My next award is the J.J. Watt Play of the Year. When Houston's liquefied kitten, as diehard Chris loves to say. We at least have J.J. Watt to watch play football. We started doing the Watt Play of the Week in 2013 when they were, 2-6 and on that huge losing streak. And at least we could find the joy of watching him. He was the, anglerfish in the dark trench of life for us that year. And, it looked like we were heading back for the abyss again this season. Things kind of turned around. But my favorite J.J. Watt Play of the Year wasn't really like a crazy play or anything, but it was whenever he had that first sack with his cast off against the Jaguars, where I think he had like three sacks that game. And the first one, he had that ripper on the edge where he just pulled the right tackle down into him, came across it, and sacked Blake Bortles for about a 7-yard loss. It was just a really simple, edge rush from a defensive end. But the best part about it, though, was whenever he did the Booker T hand, stared at it and then danced along with it, where the club was finally off and he could actually really play football again. And, it was good to see, J.J. Watt play to his ability after having the club for the 3 weeks before that.
I think mine was a play that he did nothing. It was early in the season, and I can't remember who it's against. And, who knows, maybe this happened 2 years ago. No, I'm pretty sure it happened this year. But he was rushing the quarterback, was not able to get to the quarterback, and was doing he's going to knock down the pass thing. And he jumped up, incredible elevation, incredible ups, jumps up, does not get the bat. And the ball is defensed by, I can't remember who it was defensed by, one of our cornerbacks. I'm pretty sure it was Joseph. And it comes back. And J.J. Watt was diving for the ball after it gets deflected by Jonathan Joseph. So not only did Watt have this incredible vertical jump, but he was able to recover enough to try to make a play on the deflection on just split-second stuff. And that, to me, speaks to how hard he plays every snap. I mean, we talk about guys who play 100% every snap. J.J. Watt's kind of like the centerfold of that magazine. So, and that play was just everything that he brings from an athletic standpoint to the team, that he can be that much hustle, that much athleticism. It was just, to me, it was just like, holy cow. I mean, I've watched this guy, play every snap or almost every snap for the past few years, and that play still knocked me away.
Mm-hmm. I think that was in like week 4 or so, because I remember having this same conversation earlier in the year. I can't remember what game it was, or I remember the play, though, where he leads up and tipped that one, almost ran 5 yards and dived and brought that one in. But that was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, it's the sort of thing where you're so used to watching what he does. It's like you're almost disappointed he doesn't get the interception or the fumble recovery. It's almost a letdown.
Yeah, and I think another good candidate, too, that I just remembered was whenever they had that, I think it might have been the Jets game, where there was that fumble in the pile, and J.J. Watt's back behind the pile on, like, the, eastern end of it, and then he runs all the way back to the west side of the pile and dives and finds the ball while everybody else is looking for it. And it was like he just had some radio frequency in his brain that the football was emitting signals just to him, and he was able to go come all the way around the pile and find it before anybody else did. And that was really, you know, kind of just spectacular, where he not only has – he just has this weird innate skill to do things that nobody else, you know, does, or, you know, there's no skill recovering a football unless it's J.J. Watt.
Right, right. All right, my third one is – I had a hard time coming up with the third one. Not technically the fourth one, because I wanted to do the fourth one at the end on purpose. So, come on, computer. The stupidest postseason article of 2016 award. So, this was so, of course, you know, we have our listserv that we talk about. You know, we're a very organized blog. It sometimes may not look like it, but we really are. And there was an article on PFT today, Pro Football Talk, that the Texans are going to franchise tag 40-year-old Shane Leckler for $4.5 million. They're going to franchise tag a punter at double what we could sign him for, minimum double, if not quadruple, because Shane Leckler was awful last year. But we're going to franchise tag him. Don't want to break in a new punter. This was on the level of in the new Madden, that if you have a punter who operates best in the power run scheme, that his rankings have gone from 99 to 4. I mean, this was just so up and down stupid that their logic and lack thereof. And who in the hell would tie up $4.5 million of their salary cap to a punter? I mean, you can go out and get signed a couple of veterans at minimum, and upgrade linebacker or defensive end or something. So that one's just fresh on my mind. It had me all riled up this morning because it was so freaking stupid.
I'm whenever K-Denify posted that yesterday in the comments, I was like, this shouldn't even be sent to us. This is just the stupidest thing I've ever seen. And it's not only that it's $4.5 million for a 40-year-old punter, but it's also he was bad this year. Houston had the 32nd ranked punting team, and Leckler had a lot to do with that. I mean, if you kind of just think back on all the touchbacks he had this year, where balls did not get, you know, knocked down the 7-yard line, but you remember the ones that did, because every time it happened, the announcers just blew Leckler like, "Oh my God, there's another great Leckler punt. That's why he's going to the Hall of Fame." Even though that happens once every, you know, 7 times he gets a try. So he was bad. It's a lot of money. But also the real kicker, though, is what you just said, is that the fact that the Texans may franchise him because they don't want to break in a new punter. That's the easiest thing to break in. You could take Matt Turk. You know, he probably isn't even in the league anymore, and his one, you know, buckle chin strap. He could come in and, you know, get 35 yards a kick, and it doesn't matter. And for $4.5 million, you can get 5 players to rebuild your entire, you know, 32nd ranked punting unit and make your punter as even less valuable. So that one, that was, you know, really just one of the dumbest things I've ever read. And it's such a stupid, like, silly little article too to bitch about, but it was just such a level of just dumbness that it's kind of hard to comprehend.
Yeah, I wonder what Chad Stanley's up to these days.
Can you name any other past Texans punters?
How many can you name?
Let's hear it.
Let's go. Well, got Matt Turk, Chad Stanley. Yeah. There's this psycho guy. God, I can't get Brian Brahman's name out of my head.
The guy who sold all those mushrooms at West Texas A&M. Got in trouble.
Yeah, that's the guy I'm looking for. I can't find. Not Dustin. Ah, crud.
I can't name anybody other than Matt Turk and Leckler. You know, I really don't remember anybody else. I remember kickers.
Yeah, because.
But not punters, because kickers broke our hearts so many times during this, you know, late 2000s.
Well, yeah, and then Tim gave Chad Stanley, like, one of the best nicknames ever, is turd-eating pederast. So, yeah, you might have to look up the last word, but it's one of the best nicknames of all time. So, it's great. That's probably the only reason I remember Chad Stanley.
I'll have to send Tim an email after this is over about turd-eating pendergrass Chad Stanley.
Pederast.
Pederast, not
Pendergrass.
How about you email him and then I'll see what he says, because I don't know how to spell that.
Okay.
All right.
Not a normal word. Lawyers.
Yeah. My last award is the New Miserable Experience Award, And this is also Jim Blossom's album title, which is a really good album. And I think that Jim Blossom is one of the more underrated 90s bands, especially if you listen to an album from front to beginning. And I know BFT hates the Goo Goo Dolls, but I'm sure he has some soft spot in his heart for the Jim Blossoms. And it's impossible not to like Jealousy, but that's on the same album, yeah. There are other albums, Congratulations, I'm Sorry, which is also a very good album title. But anyways, every year, you know, if you're a Texans fan, there's going to be something miserable that's going to happen. It's going to be kind of like the one thing you can remember. You don't remember necessarily the seasons, but I think you kind of bookmark the awful things that happen that go along with every Texan season. And so this award goes to the worst moment of the year. And my answer is the Miami game in general. It wasn't, you know, just the five touchdowns off your yards after the catch where they were just breaking screen passes and running to the sideline and cutting back, making everybody miss. But the real kind of kicker to me was Ryan Tannehill did the Michael Jordan shrug. I think that's like the four touchdown. And Ryan Tannehill did the Michael Jordan, you know, shrug. Of all the fucking people to just shrug your shoulders and have no idea what the fuck's going on because he's so fucking good. It's Ryan Tannehill. And, I was never so angry before seeing that. And then also in that game, too, that was whenever Arian Foster blew out his Achilles as Bill O'Brien tried to cover it up like Area 51, trying to make the game not as big of a loss as it really was. Because it's not like there's the internet where you can look up, you know, the drives or Pro Football Reference or any box score. You know, it's not like they just go in some old man's basement. You have no idea what the box score was that game. There's the internet. We know that they got the crap kicked out of them and it's never going to go away. And Arian Foster blew out his Achilles in a meaningless game too. But that's my most miserable experience award this year.
Well, I think low-hanging fruit for this one for me is clearly Hoyer's floater. But I'm going to go a little bit more macro on our asses, and I'm going to go with the very first play from scrimmage for the season, which is Brian Hoyer dropping back against the Kansas City Chiefs and throwing a no-look interception to Marcus Peters. I don't think anything really – to me, nothing sums up the season better than that. That was the first play of the season, and you had all the Brian Hoyer fanboys talking about it was the Browns' fault. Bob can fix them. And the very first play of the season is a interception that he basically never even turned and looked up when he threw the ball. So that set the entire tone for the season, that Brian Hoyer was not somebody who could be trusted with the football in his hand. So that's the one, that's the play I'm going to go with. The very first play of the season.
Yeah.
Which
and
is really freaking depressing.
And it's to DeAndre Hopkins, who wasn't open at all because they were playing press coverage. And Hoyer was looking the entire way, and the pass rush kind of comes, and then he craps his pants and just throws it over there. And it should have been a pick six, too. But I think Alex Smith ended up throwing a touchdown pass to Kelsey a little bit after that. But that's a really good pick as well.
Okay, so my fourth one is the Warren Moon Award for your most coveted NFL free agent this offseason. So for those of you who don't remember, Warren Moon is – I don't know if he's – you might be able to make arguments for other people, but I really think Warren Moon is the best free agent that the Houston franchise has ever signed. When you go back and look at the history of the Texans and, you know, you think of great mind or great players like Amon Green or Chris Brown, who we signed as free agent, it's kind of hard to make an argument the Texans have signed a free agent that did not completely suck. So my Warren Moon most coveted free agent this offseason is somebody we'll never get, but it's Malik Jackson, currently of the Broncos. I would love to take him and drop him in as a defensive end, bookending, J.J. Watt on the other side. He is so disruptive. He's so big. He's so strong. He's so quick. I think that if you want to really up the Texans for next year, that doesn't include the quarterback position. And I'm even saying, hey, well, let's even let Quentin Demps play snaps at safety. Get me a defensive end who's disruptive. Somebody that can rush, the quarterback in sub packages. Somebody that can create havoc on first and second down. If you want to give me a Christmas present, how about a Easter present? Get me Malik Jackson, because that guy team a couple of notches and probably turn the Texans into the best defense in the league.
Yeah, I like that. And I think what I've watched Jared Krick a little bit this year. And I mean, I wrote those two defensive articles, and the thing I saw with him was, which was really weird, was he couldn't rush the passer and he couldn't penetrate, but he was really good at taking on double teams. And you would never have thought that Jared Krick was going to be some guy who could take on tackles and guards like he did, but he did a really nice job against double teams and opened things up for Merciless and Clowney on the outside some. I mean, he was better than taking on double teams than Vince Wilfork, but even I was as a whenever I played scout team football against guys who were 75 pounds heavier and full and had full beards before, I had even belly hair playing against them in scout team in high school. That's how bad Vince Wilfork was this year. But I would guess mine would have to be Von Miller, even though that will never happen because he's just probably the best defensive player on earth right now. He has the championship belt after what he did against New England and Carolina, where he just had two of the most disruptive, incredible games I've ever seen from a defensive player, especially when you factor in the Stags. But I guess the more reasonable guy, maybe Eric Weddle. I haven't really looked at the free agent list, but I think they signed Weddle. They could have two good safeties back there, and Weddle can actually tackle. He can play in the box, but he also gives you the opportunity to cover things deep as well and actually have some impact on the coverage game, unlike the fart salad, Twitter block that is Quinnen Demps. So I think Weddle probably my choice, even though Malik Jackson would be even better, but I'm not going to pick the same thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, the only problem with Weddle is I think he's 32 next year.
Yeah. Maybe he's signed for 2 years or something. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, he breaks my 30 years old at a skill position rule.
Yeah. Well, and Lamar Miller would be really cool also, except I'm 100% against first-round running backs, second-round running backs, and paying a lot of money for running backs, unless it's somebody with an extreme skill set like Arian Foster, like Adrian Peterson, a guy like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess I kind of more than – we didn't get any guest awards at all, which is fine. And I have, I guess, two, kind of awards that I wrote about in my awards post earlier this week that I'll hand out, and then – or I'll ask you for your opinion on. And then we'll kind of, I guess, review the season. And I would kind of rather take a deeper dive into that than go into things like the game of the year. But I have three awards I'd like to get your opinion on, and my opinion's already been stated. I'm not going to say anything at all. My first one is, what is your Jamie Sharper hipster jersey of the year?
My vote was Ryan Mallett because he was just such a screw-up. If you're wearing a Ryan Mallett jersey, you're only doing it ironically. Hipster equals ironically Ryan Mallett.
Supreme white trash because he's from Arkansas,
Well, yeah. I mean, they don't even have the internet back up there.
Your possum is your Wi-Fi router out there. Its tail.
Right.
That's what sends the signal. It's his tail. Well, yeah, and that whole one came up because I went to the flea market a few years back, and I had $20 I wanted to spend, and it was either a Jamie Sharper battle red jersey that was like an XL. It was just a little bit too big, or a backpacking backpack. And I went with the backpacking backpack instead of – always kind of regret the Jamie Sharper thing, but that backpack has taken me to, 19 different national parks and from one side of the country to the other. I've had a lot of fun experiences with it. And it still works great, too, and that's something that costs you $300. So I probably should have said that story before I asked the question, but I need to get that off my chest. The next one I have here is the Petey Faggins Award, which is for Die Hard Chris. And this is just a player who you just incessantly hated all year long.
I'm having a hard time separating the wheat from the chaff on this one because guys that come to mind immediately are Brian Hoyer, of course, Alfred Blue, who I just absolutely despise. except on special teams. He's great on special teams. Love the dude on special teams. He's a good number three running back. Raheem Moore, clearly. Vince Wilfork. Jared Krick. I think if I were to choose between one of those, somebody who I just want just just can't stand it'd be Raheem Moore. Because that one was a shit signing from the beginning.
Yeah, and then Chris really hated Nate Washington. That was his pick, and he hated
Nate Washington. Damn it.
Yeah,
I forgot about him.
And the weird thing about Washington was he wasn't that bad, except he could not reach over his head. You know, like every pass that went over his helmet, he could not catch. Even the ones that were in his chest, he wouldn't catch too. But he probably had about 20 drops this year, and you know he was terrible. And it, you know Andre Johnson wasn't good. But they kind of got, like, a worse version of Andre Johnson for, you know, half as much. So, I think, you know, it's kind of a wash out there. But he did have 40 catches.
Yeah, but I don't even want to address that. You know, I'm just going to get pissed off and throw things.
Well, who's your MVP of the season?
My MVP is J.J. Watt. I definitely get the argument for DeAndre Hopkins. No, definitely. But Watt is so special. He's so elite. It's just that defense is not nearly what it is without him. Yes, his ad-libbing does get him out of position at times. You can really make some quibbling arguments about that. But he is just—it's really hard to say. You're watching somebody who, in my opinion, very strongly held opinion, by the way, is that when you talk about the transcendent football players over the past 50 years defensively, and you talk about guys like Derek Thomas or Lawrence Taylor or Reggie White and those kinds of guys, Bruce Smith, I'll take J.J. Watt over any of them. And so I just think he's so special, he's so good that he's the MVP.
Okay. Yeah, mine was DeAndre Hopkins, and it was either one, and my whole argument was just that without DeAndre Hopkins, Houston doesn't score the 20 points a game that they have to score to win these, you know, really short side ones. And especially when you factor in he had 11 touchdowns, was seventh in the league, and a lot of those touchdowns came from 20 yards out where they just threw the ball up to him on the sideline, and those are most likely field goals. But it either has to be Watt or Hopkins. And in the Reader's Choice Awards, J.J. Watt was 80%, DeAndre Hopkins was 20%, everybody else was 0%. And then in the Offensive Player of the Year award, it was 100% DeAndre Hopkins. And I think Watt was like 80-20 with Merciless. So it just kind of shows that Houston's like two kind of, you know, transcendent talents on both sides of the ball.
Yep.
All right, well, that's all we have for awards. So now we'll just kind of get into season review. And this is kind of mostly like how we do it, where we ask questions and sit around and talk about them for a little while. There's nothing anything cute or clever at all. But the first one, I guess there's kind of two ways to look at this season, and especially if you're looking for Bill O'Brien's perspective. So the first one is that he threw a lot of crap at the dartboard in the off season, just, you know, took a bunch of different gambles with some guys, and neither one of them panned out, but he still took four quarterbacks, turned Houston from 2-5 to a division champion. That was a very admirable job. Or the other was that O'Brien coached the best team in a terrible division that beat a 40-year-old quarterback who played 11 straight games and took advantage of Andrew Luck's injury. Which one of these scenarios do you agree with?
Sorry, I was drinking beer. I was getting nice and drunk for this show, by the way, everybody. So family's gone. I got a couple beers out here on the porch, even though I could be inside, but it's beautiful out here right now.
It's beautiful outside, yeah.
I really think that when I look at Bill O'Brien's body of work, I am still just not overly impressed. We beat teams we were supposed to beat. We have a lot of talent offensively. We have a very strong offensive line. We have DeAndre Hopkins, teams that we're supposed to beat. And really the only surprise one that we won was Cincinnati. But we got demolished by Atlanta, destroyed by Miami. And those are, to me, that's just, you know, it's not like these games were even close. We were destroyed, and no team in the NFL had two games like that. So, you can say we won some squeakers. We beat some teams we should have. Look, the fact is, with our talent, we really should have beaten Atlanta, just talent alone, and Miami. Both of those games we should have won. Neither of those teams are good. And they kicked our
ass. And that first Indy game, too.
That first Indy game when you had the corpse of Matt Hasselbeck out there, you know, throwing the ball around and kicking her ass, and Andre Johnson kicking her ass.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, though. I enjoyed that.
So, you know, it's hard for me to look at what Bill O'Brien has, quote-unquote, accomplished and say, that's Bill O'Brien. What I see is, look out, is I see Kareem Jackson, Jonathan Joseph, Brian Cushing, J.J. Watt, Whitney Mercilus, them putting in the work and doing the work, Dwayne Brown, Brandon Brooks, Derek Newton on the offensive line, putting in the work, DeAndre Hopkins. And, you know, I can't look at any of those factors and say that's Bill O'Brien's handiwork. I just can't. Mm-hmm. So I do think it was that Bill O'Brien coaching in a crappy division and not really giving a whole lot of credit to Bill O'Brien. You know, I think Dom Capers goes 9-7 with this team.
Yeah, and I think that was the biggest thing that I was thinking about this year was so Bill O'Brien is 18-15, you know, these 2 years. How many of these players, though, are his players, aside from the quarterback? If you look at the best players on this team, they're all from the Gary Kubiak era. You know, J.J. Watt, Dwayne Brown, Brandon Brooks, DeAndre Hopkins, Brian Cushing, Jonathan Joseph, Kareem Jackson, all the, you know, really talented guys that are on this roster and on this team. These are all guys from whenever Gary Kubiak was there. You know, we still haven't seen a whole lot from Clowney. Kevin Johnson's really good. But this is pretty much the fumes of a roster that was, you know, a potential Super Bowl contender before Matt Schaub, you know, stopped learning how to play football. And he really hasn't done a whole lot. He inherited a really talented team that won 2 games because of a lot of bad luck, not because they were bad, and then turned it to 2 9-win teams, even though there wasn't, you know, anything he really did special at all to make that occur. Most of it was just simply regression. But and the other thing about Bill O'Brien that I find very infuriating too is this idea that he's won this many games with 7 different quarterbacks. Whose fault is that? You know, it's like if he shot himself in the foot and walked a marathon, well, great, he did that, great. But he still shot himself in the foot to begin with. It was still, he created his own adversity, you know, by not actually addressing the quarterback position, by using a bunch of peripatetic, you know, bounce around journeyman, gritty, washed up quarterbacks, or the rare, you know, older, talented white guy with a strong arm. And instead of actually using the chance whenever he had the chance to really invest heavily in the quarterback position, he opted not to. And so we have a guy who's taken a talented roster, has played with a bunch of bad quarterbacks because of his choice, and he's gone 18-15, and he's supposed to be celebrated because of it. And I don't really understand that at all. I think he's done a good job with the quarterbacks he's had, but it's still his fault. I think he does a good job game planning and offense, but it's still, he has created his limitations for himself, and it's hard to, you know, give him any sort of, you know, praise for the adversity he sets for himself, you know?
Yeah, and we've talked about several issues. You know, we've talked about the lack of athleticism on special teams. We talked about lack of athleticism at running back, you know, getting retreads at wide receiver. And why are we playing Nate Droppington over Jalen Strong? You know, the personnel decisions. If there is an area where he's very strong, Bill O'Brien, is that he is willing to cut the cord on guys much quicker than Gary Kubiak. Kubiak was far too loyal. He's far too willing to settle for mediocrity. But I also think that Kubiak did a better job on game planning, getting his team ready, and those sorts of things. And, you know, I think that if we had Wade and Son of Bum this year coaching the Texans with 2 more drafts under the belt, I think we're better than a 9-17. Because let's face it, we're given – easy wins against the shit in our division every year. So, you know, we got 5 of them this year. So that means, you know, we're going 4-7 against other teams because we're not playing total and utter crap. Mm-hmm. So it's frustrating. It really is. I mean, the Titans and the Jaguars are 2 of the worst run franchises in football. The Titans are the worst run franchise in football.
Yeah, they are.
Just so, you know, we get lucky. Those are 4 easy wins just because we exist in the same division.
Mm-hmm. And I think it would kind of be interesting if there's a different, you know, world where Kubiak doesn't get fired and him and Wade Phillips stay there. And The interesting thing would have been what they would have done at quarterback. With Kubiak at sitting at 1.1, would they have traded back? Would he have taken Bortles? Would he have taken Bridgewater? Would he have taken Manziel? Would he have taken Derek Carr? Would he have taken a quarterback, you know, last year? Or would he have done something like trade a third-round pick for Brock Osweiler or, you know, Nick Foles or maybe, you know, somebody who is a backup quarterback and attempt to try to build a position like that? And I think that would have been kind of an interesting situation where with an incumbent team that just won two games with a head coach like that, who is forced to win now and right and at this moment, he's making a change to the quarterback position. Ryan Fitzpatrick's not the star with Kubiak in 2014. And so I think that would have been an interesting what if he stayed and who their quarterback would be right now at the moment.
Blake Bortles. I think he's very strong with Blake Bortles. Yep.
Okay. Well, and I guess this kind of goes back to what you were mentioning earlier about your phrase of the year, and it was the failure to address the quarterback position. Because even in some of the comments I saw on the awards post, there was the opinions that, you know, the Texans did address the quarterback position. They brought in a bunch of different guys. They tried a lot of different things. But I think there's a difference between addressing something. It's like, you know, let's say you have a huge hole in your tire and you put a piece of duct tape over it. I guess literally you're addressing it, but you need to get a new tire. You need to actually do something to change it. Otherwise, you're going to be dealing with the same problems over and over again. And so there's a big difference between actually investing in the position, trying to find something that's going to stick, actually putting resources and time into it rather than just, you know, crapping all over the dartboard and hoping, you know, something sticks. You know, and so I think there's a big difference between the two, between the literal sense of it and the actual, you know, deeper meaning of what it means to actually address a position like this.
Yeah, it was our version of Jenny's little longhorn chicken chip bingo.
Yeah.
Which is the thing we have here in Austin. We do Jenny's little longhorn saloon has chicken chip bingo, and it's quite a hoot.
They have South Park with that as well, too.
Sorry?
They have South Park with that, too. I think they cut the chicken's head off, though, and wherever he died at and landed, that's where the option was. I think it was something like that.
Well, so a chicken. That's neat. That's not nice. We have 13 chickens, so I love my chicken. So, yeah, and that's exactly. I mean, what can I say? I agree. I mean, we've been on the same line of that. It would have been, you know, Bill O'Brien was the coach I wanted coming out. You know, I don't like recycled coaches. I mean, oh, goodness, I couldn't believe people actually. I mean, even the rat in the maze learns, and yet Ken Wisenhunt still gets jobs. I mean, How does that happen?
He's supposed to fix a running game for somebody this year. I can't remember where he signed, but I just saw something like that.
Oh, my God, it's so ridiculous. Anyway, yeah. All right, I'm done.
Would you consider the season a success?
Oh boy! You know, when I saw that question on your guide, I don't know how to answer it because it was such a mixed message year. You know, at some point, you know, 9-7 was really fun back in 2011. It got us into the playoffs.
Especially that 9-7 was so, like, insane and all the missed horrible field goals and all this so close. Like, Chris Brown fumbles into the end zone. The Chris Brown missed field goals. The overtime pick sixes. Oh, my. It was just the most incredible just, like, 2 years ever that, like, 2008, 2019.
Yeah.
Even 2010 as well.
But you look at the current Texans roster and you go, okay, that's a top 10 defense and that offensive line is pretty dadgum good. And you got DeAndre Hopkins at wide receiver. I've seen worse. So to go 9-7, it's almost like kissing your sister. And not with tongue. That's just gross. But it's just so – and I said it. It was my tagline for a while, striving for mediocrity. That's what I felt like this team was striving for mediocrity, signing Nate Droffington, signing Cecil Shorts.
Hey, don't talk about
Brian
like that.
I know. Signing Raheem Moore, you know, these are guys you're going and telling yourself, I just don't want to be good. I want to be just, I want to be mediocre. And so do I look at the season as a success? And my honest response is no, I don't. Because this team should have been better than 9-7. It was so ill-prepared for a couple of games. It lost games it should have won. That we outmatched the other team on paper. But because we're trying out Brian freaking Hoyer at quarterback, you're putting yourself in a position to lose. And so, no, I don't think this season was a success by that standard. Not by the standard of we had X amount of talent and we won 9 games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess also what you're going about, too, is strive for mediocrity. It was what Bill O'Brien – I always really think about this quote Bill O'Brien had his rookie head coaching season. And he said, we're going to be the team that plays great defense, keeps games close, and wins at the end of the game, which is our strategy to try to be a successful football team over long term, because all the data, all the information shows that winning one-possession games changes year to year. It's a fluky stat. And it's not a good way at all to build any sort of team. You know, if you're winning 20-13, some bad bounces are going to happen, and you're going to lose 20-13, and you're just kind of basing things off a coin flip. And so I think if you're basing your team around that, you're not going to do any better than 9-7 because bad things are going to happen. And they're over the course of, you know, 16 games, 32 games, you're never going to really get ahead or behind at all. And so I think all you're doing in that way is just trying for mediocrity. But that being said, I consider the season a success. I just kind of look at it as, you know, logistically, yes or no, live or die, you know, pass or failed. And with the NFL season, I look at it just as, did they make the playoffs or not make the playoffs? And that's the one goal of the regular season. And if you make the playoffs, I consider the season a success. If you don't, I consider it a failure. And they made the playoffs this year. They won the division. There's a lot more to be desired. You know, probably, and if this team ever gets a goddamn quarterback, you know, some better things should happen, but that hasn't happened yet. So I would consider the season a success, though, by that logic.
I can buy. I mean, I think that's a more than valid argument. I mean, because getting into the playoffs gives you a chance, and as long as there's a chance, then that's something.
You mentioned the offensive line earlier. You said this is a good offensive line. Do you think this unit's going to stay together, and are you worried all about Dwayne Brown heading into next season?
I'm not worried about Dwayne Brown all that much. I am extremely worried about being able to keep Brandon Brooks. That there's a couple of guards that are going to be out on the market, but Ozemele?
Yeah, from Baltimore.
Right? Yeah, from Baltimore. There's a chance that someone's going to take him and move him to tackle. And so that makes the guard market even that much more important. I think signing Brandon Brooks just, you know, brings truck, pull it up in his driveway, open the doors and say, have at it. What's it going to take? If we don't keep him, I think we're in a lot of trouble. Brandon Brooks is a special, special physical, and athletic and intelligent football player. We have to keep him. Dwayne Brown, it's time to start finding his replacement. He has been mediocre is too strong of a term, but he has not been Dwayne Brown. He's one of those guys. I think he turns 31 this year. He's getting on the wrong side of 30. Offensive line, that's more okay. But here's the bigger issue that I've got is that if Bill O'Brien is going to turn more into a power run gap team rather than the zone that we've seen in the past, then I'm not really sure how our current personnel fits what Bill O'Brien wants to run. And so, you know, Brandon Brooks, he's special because he's so big and so athletic, but do you let him walk for a Marshall Yanda? So, you know, that's not – I wouldn't do that. I would never do that. But that's just me because I see how effective Brandon Brooks is. Yes, Marshall Yanda is very special. He's also going to cost all the money. So I am worried about the cohesion of the team just because of more because of Brandon Brooks than because of Dwayne Brown.
Okay. Yeah, and you know, Brandon Brooks and this impending free agent is kind of like what we've seen before with, you know, Connor Barwin or Glover Quinn or some of the other, you know, Texans players who were veterans. They finally hit a mid-round pick and they let him walk because they didn't want to pay him any money after this, you know, first deal was up. And I think Brandon Brooks is one of the guys that you have to sign. I really like this Texans offensive line. One, because they're versatile. You know, they can play power schemes. They can play the zone scheme. They can do both, you know, really well. And they also played really well together. As, you know, the offensive line was crap until they all got healthy. You had all five playing together. And they did a really good job. I mean, their one issue is that they don't block linebackers very well. And then that's more about playing so many different, you know, schemes, playing, going outside zone, inside zone, power plays, counter. It's hard. Your aiming points are different and your steps are different. And so there's not as much continuity. I think that's the main reason why they have problems blocking the second level. But I think, you know, going forward, they can keep this unit together. They're going to be really good again next year. I think they're at least a top 15 offensive line. And I think Brandon Brooks, I think you give him, you know, kind of Derek Newton money. And you lock down that right side of your offensive line for the next 4 years. And you have guys who are, you know, Brandon Brooks and Derek Newton, I think they're both, you know, about 27, 26 years old. And those are guys that you can keep there until they're 30, 31, keep them until they're prime, you know. And so I think that's an investment that you have to make.
It's one I would make. I mean, you know, we're working on our What Did I Learn About Football this year. And I've known for a long time. It's funny. Okay, goofy shit I do is when I draft, I love to do Madden full redrafts every year. I do one or two because mm-hmm. I really enjoy the shit out of it. I don't take anything but offensive line or cornerbacks or defensive line for like the first 10 picks. I want to make damn sure well the offensive line kicks ass, my cornerback can cover, and my defensive line can create havoc. And that's what I focus on. So when I think about football, that's my mentality when I look at football, is that Brian Hoyer can put up the numbers he did clean by a very solid offensive line. We have seen the Texans historically have put together very strong offensive lines post the David Carr years. So what I have learned about football is your offensive line can cover up a lot of warts from your quarterback and a lot of warts from your running backs. So mm-hmm. that's where I want to put my focus on. If I'm an offensive coordinator, I want to make sure my offensive line keeps my quarterback healthy, my number one quarterback healthy, and keeps my running backs touched a little bit long farther down the line of scrimmage rather than right at the line of scrimmage. So that's where I would put my focus. Sign Brandon Brooks. Give him all the money.
Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited for what you write. I know I'm a writer. I just haven't done it yet. And we'll probably also talk about that question probably next week just because we're running out of time. But there's two more questions I have for you. The next one is Jadeveon Clowney. We talked about him a lot in the preseason, a lot over the summer, a lot last year. And this year he missed four games. He suffered just a bunch of different, like, weird injuries. His foot was hurt. His groin was hurt. And he had probably had some other kind of weird little things. He got bit by DJ Swearinger's dog. You know, some weird things happened to him this year. And he finished the year with 40 tackles, 5 stuffs, 4.5 sacks, 6 passes defended, and 1 forced fumble. Are you happy or impressed with him this year? And what type of season are you expecting from him next year?
I was. I think that what we got out of him this year, we should feel fortunate because I wasn't expecting him to show the quicks that he did. It's unfortunate that he missed four games because he really needs to be on the field. He really needs to be getting real reps out there. That's the only way he's going to get better at this point. So that was a terrible disappointment. It's worrisome. Again, I go back to the – I've long argued that the most important skill an athlete has is health. Everything else is secondary. If you're not on the field, it doesn't freaking matter. And right now, Clowney does not have that as a skill. And I realize it's a random thing, but it is the most important thing. So if you look at Brian Cushing's career, where he's dealt with injuries over the years, he's not nearly the same guy he was. And what I'm starting to see is Clowney kind of turning into that injuries pile up. I've had 7 knee surgeries, for crikey's sake. I can tell you the injuries pile up. They hurt. It hurts to wake up sometimes in the morning. So these guys are no different. It hurts. You have so many things happen to your body. It hurts. So Clowney needs to stay healthy. And there's no magical formula for that. You do the lifting, do the stretching and those sorts of things. But that to me is super important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, and we talked about this earlier in the year too, what was so devastating about his rookie year and him only playing a little amount of time that he had was that he needed the reps. He needed the practice reps. He needed the time to work with Mike Vrabel. He needed the time to go against offensive tackles. And I've wrote about this a few times. We've talked about it a few times. But it's worth saying again that with Clowney, he was such an incredible physical player and so much more superior athletically in college that he didn't have, you know, really any skills at all. You know, he didn't have, like, really any pass rush moves perfected. He got by a whole lot with just being bigger, faster, and stronger. And then the NFL, the athletes are, you know, just as good as you. And if you're better than them, the difference is, you know, it's a lot more marginal. It's mitigated a lot more. And so you have to be able to become a football player. You need skills to be able to, you know, have success. And so he lost his entire rookie year. He lost a chance to create skills and become an actual football player. And this year, you know, all we were kind of looking for was flashes, especially after the microfracture knee surgery. We just wanted to see flashes that he could be the player that, you know, we saw at South Carolina, that freak athlete. And that was the only thing we wanted to see. And he had the flashes this year. I mean, and in addition to that, though, he actually showed some skill, especially, you know, later on the year, especially that Patriots game where he did the Deacon Jones club to the head and beat two guys for both the guard and the tackle for a sack. We saw some rip moves from him, some swim moves. He actually learned how to read an offensive lineman's steps instead of just go run the backfield with his head cut off and, you know, miss the running back as he cuts right past him. And so we actually saw, you know, football growth for him. So because of that, I was, you know, really impressed, very happy with what I saw with Clowney. But there's still that whole, you know, injury issue looking forward. And so next year, I just want to see him play 16 games. I think if he can play 16 games, I think it should be like a breakout 15 sack, you know, sort of year. The type of year that Khalil Mack had this year is the year that Clowney can have, but it all depends if he stays healthy. So are you worried at all? We were kind of seeing a Greg Oden situation with Jadeveon Clowney.
I think Greg Oden's probably too far, but there was a third baseman for the Giants back in the late 80s, early 90s named Chris Brown. Very talented young man.
Chris Brown. I know him.
Yeah, he's a very talented baseball player, but he couldn't stay on the field. He could not stay on the field. Whenever he played, he was outstanding, but he could not stay on the field. And that's the comp that runs through my head when I think about Clowney, is that he's, you know, outstanding talent. He's better than everybody else when he's out on the field, but he just needs to be out on the field. And if you go back to his 2013 season, he was also hurt all season. And that's why he only had, whatever it was, 3.5 sacks his last year in college. So over his last 3 years, he has been hurt, microfracture, and missed 4 games.
And hernia, too, as well. And he had hernia surgery. And he got bit by a dog. Hurt. Don't forget that also.
He got bit by a freaking dog.
That's,
I mean, this guy's
4-1.
Got my luck.
Yeah, stop hanging out with him so much. You're the problem.
No shit. So, I mean, I would love to see that, because the fact is that he's got 2 years left on this rookie contract right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't know what we've got, and he's only got 2 years left.
Yeah, that's a weird thought. But I guess don't you have the opportunity to sign him for that fifth year for a much higher price or something like that for a first-round pick?
Yeah.
And then if it's like a sixth-round pick, it's the fourth year that he gets a pay increase. But
yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess to sum up, you know, I'm looking forward to Klein next year. I think he can break out if he can stay healthy for 16 games. And the skill's there, the talent's there, the athleticism's there. It's just the health. And so if he can be healthy, he's really good, and really good things should happen. And maybe Houston can jump from, you know, eighth in DVOA to, you know, second or third, you know, something, make that sort of, like, elite jump instead of being, you know, just very good. The last part that I'd like to talk about is DeAndre Hopkins. And this year, in every counting stat, you know, yards, receptions, targets, he was third behind Antonio Brown and Julio Jones. But he actually had more touchdowns with them with 11. He was seventh in the league in that. What was the difference between, you know, last year and this year? And what was the main reason why he made such a big leap in production and his play as well?
I think it's very simple. No more Andre Johnson and no tight ends that were reliable enough to throw to. We played in a lot of games from behind, so a lot of balls went to him. I mean, he was king of targets most of the year. To me, it's just basically you've got Nate Droppington, Garrett Graham, Tim Griffin, C.J. Fedorowicz, Cecil Shorts. I know you hate it when I rag on him. But if that's what your targets are, and you look at that and you go, damn, number 10, every ball. And, you know, that would be my attitude. And that's how I was often joking is, you know, when T.J. Yates goes in or Brandon Whedon goes in, you know, all that O'Brien needs to say is just throw the ball to number 10. Don't look at anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
He has talked about how he needs to improve his yards after catch. He was pretty much the worst yards after catch. But let's look at his body of work. When you're having to stretch out to catch balls because they're, you know, they're 10 yards away from you on launch, or you're having to run balls out of bounds, that's just, of course you're not going to have any yak. I mean, goodness mm-hmm. sake, part of yak is the quarterback. That's the accuracy we talk about with quarterbacks is you hit your receivers in stride, you do those things to help your receivers succeed after the catch. And Brian Hoyer, that's the very last thing on Brian Hoyer's resume he's going to be able to help you to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not on him. If he wants to improve, he needs to get a new quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree too. I guess I want to talk about yak because that's what you said last. And I think it was a combination lack of ball placement. And also, I'm writing this DeAndre Hopkins film piece, and it should be up probably Thursday, I would hope, Friday at the latest. It's just one of these things where I haven't wrote a whole lot about wide receiver play, and so it's hard for me to articulate, you know, the kind of, you know, the subjective film that I see. But one of the things about Hopkins is that all of his routes are next to the sideline. I think like 72% of his routes were curls, comebacks, corners, fades, and outs, and these are all routes that run towards the sideline. So if he's going to get yards after the catch, he has to catch that pass. Then he has to turn and go back towards the center field, towards the defenders to make anything to make things happen against the team's best cornerback who usually tackles fairly well. And then in addition to that, you're also mentioning the ball placement. He has to be hinged dry. He's not hinged dry. And also, he doesn't run the slant routes, the dig routes, the post routes. The screens, he only was targeted twice on a screen pass this year, and he caught one of them for 5 yards. He doesn't run those routes, you know, to pick up a lot of yards after the catch. I think the thing that made Hopkins, you know, really special was just the way the offense was set up for him, where he was isolated on one side of the formation and everybody else was on the other side. And so they just wanted to put him in man-versus-man situations where he wasn't running routes towards the defense. He's running routes away from the defense so he could just get man coverage, win that battle, and make the play. The problem, though, is that he wasn't efficient. He was, like, I think, 23rd in DVOA. He was 11th in DYAR. And that was the problem with the catch rate. It was, like, 55%, 52%. And a lot of that was a result of the lack of, you know, throws from the quarterback play. And I think it kind of comes down to the fact that I think he's 23 years old. Wide receivers hit their peak at 27. And for Hopkins to ever actually reach his peak, you know, he's going to peak, you know, ability-wise, but production-wise, for him to ever, I guess, hit that, like, you know, 1,800-yard season, 1,900-yard season that he may be capable of, it's going to take a real quarterback to actually turn a lot of these incompletions that should be completions that they're leaving on the field. And I think that's a lot of throws on the field for Hopkins. So, I mean, he's incredible. He's remarkable. He's done some great things. And I'm excited, you know, for you and everybody else to read this article I'm working on. And he was pretty much the only thing that was joyful to watch on this offense, aside from, you know, Brian Brooks and Derek Newton.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, is there anything else that you want to get off your chest at all?
No, well, let's do one more question real fast. We got time for it. It's the Will Fork versus Ed Reed.
Okay.
And I would say, so the question is, which is the worst free agent signing, Vince Will Fork or Ed Reed? You know, Will Fork at least had some games. I mean, he wasn't great. He was probably a net negative. But we lost Glover Quinn because we pursued Ed Reed. And
mm-hmm.
that's like, you know, like in Harry Potter, there's the unforgivable curses. That's like the unforgivable fuck up by Rick's. Well, that, I think that was an Uncle Bob move, but that's the unforgivable fuck up.
Glover Quinn
has
too many tattoos. You can't pay guys for all those tattoos.
That's right. And you know what? Lawhorn, probably still has his wife if it's not for that deal too. So thanks a lot, Rick Smith, Uncle Bob. It's Ed Reed is easily the worst signing, free agent signing by the team, and that's saying something with the Texans' history of free agents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's I would say that's the way to look at it. I think the other thing though about Vince Wilfork is that he plays a much more important part of the defense at nose tackle, where he's the focal point of the run defense. He's there to make things easier. And so I think if you look at on-field production, Vince Wilfork, and I guess the importance, Vince Wilfork is a worse signing because he was signed to be really good at this one thing, and he was terrible at this one thing where you could have got the same production from, you know, like Jarrell Poe wasn't as bad, but they paid him $700,000. And so you could got just a guy who's the size of a refrigerator to play there and done what Vince Wilfork did. But whenever you factor in the opportunity cost, who did, I guess instead of having Ryan Pickett there, maybe a sixth-round pick, they had Vince Wilfork compared to having Glover Quinn back there for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years at a pretty cheap deal too. So I think it's kind of a tie. I think if opportunity cost, it's Ed Reed, but as far as production and importance, it's Vince Wilfork.
All right.
Well, and also, did you get your championship package?
I did, and I forgot I was going to take a picture of it and post it, but I forgot to do it. So it's a, ladies and gentlemen, it's a Cecil Shorts III National Treasures piece of his uniform. It's like the ultimate in trolling gift, but it's beautiful, and it's sitting on top of my desk right now.
And it's autographed, too.
And it's autographed. That's right.
Yeah.
I
made sure you went with the 3. I think it was like also like $7 or something. And it's as nice of a card as you can get of a player for only $7.
That's right. And that, you know, it's a lot of fun. So thank you. That was a wonderful gift. That's a very
wonderful
gift.
You're welcome. Yeah. Take a picture. I think we can fan shot it and put on the front page. So I think it is front page worthy. For all 300 people who've been listening.
Right. Everything I do is front page worthy, dude.
Yeah. Take a snapshot of it from the front page tonight, and Tim can deal with it tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll wait until he's knee deep in Coors Light to post it.
Yeah. My other thing, I was either gonna get that or I was gonna get a pair of I Heart Hater socks, but the Cecil Shorts thing was just something I had to do. So if you win next year, you're gonna get some I Heart Hater socks, and you know you'll probably forget by then at your age. So I can tell you anything right now, and it doesn't matter.
French toast, please.
Well, good. Well, I don't have anything else. So I'm glad you got the package. I'm glad you liked it, and I'm excited to see a picture of it later tonight. But yeah. Well, next week
I'll have to do it tomorrow because of the sun. I'll do it tomorrow because of the sun. I can't do it right now.
Okay, or tomorrow. Yeah, do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that should be fun. But next week is going to be our last show for a while, probably until right before the NFL draft. And I have a really good NFL draft podcast idea, too. But we're going to be on next Tuesday. We're going to do an off-season preview. We're going to look at potential cuts. We're going to look at Damon Dan's question. We're actually going to answer it this time. And we're not going to look at Texans' question of we should analyze next year based off the opponents, because weird games happen like the Miami loss, the Atlanta loss, where if you're projecting picking wins week to week, it's difficult enough, but you can't pick wins and pick teams from, you know, 7 months out, let alone a month before the season starts. So I'm anti that. But we will answer Damon Dan's question. But we'll look at, you know, potential cuts, potential free agents, holes that need to be addressed for free agency, some ideas, some things that we would do if we were Rick Smith, and
think about some stuff. And also that would be one of them.
Yeah. But don't forget that. We'll look at all that, though, next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central. And thank you again for listening tonight. Thank you for listening all season. We've had a very good time. And if you enjoy the show, tell your friends, you know, tell your coworkers, rate and review the show on iTunes as well. And we'll be back next Tuesday at 7 p.m. I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for staying a while listening to Battle Red Radio. And thank you for being again tonight, BFG.
Woo! Hell yeah.
thought that was pretty good.